Labors of Love. An informative look at modern-day evangelization, featuring the ministries and work of the Catholic Church in South Texas. Stay with us and learn of the Church's many services and benefits with your host, Margaret Alleria, Director of Religious Education for the Diocese of Corpus Christi, as she explores the Catholic faith with her many guests and their labors of love.
Thank you for being with us on Labors of Love. I'm here with my very special guest, Deacon Stephen Nolte, who is the Director of Family Life and Life Justice and Human Dignity for the Diocese of Corpus Christi. He is also our host of Sacred Moments here on Labors of Love. It's a pleasure to have you here today, Deacon.
Thank you, Margaret. It's always a pleasure to be here.
You know, it's been actually quite a long time since I've had you as a guest here, so I want our listeners to get to know a little bit about you, if you can share a little bit about yourself.
Margaret, as you know, I'm married. I'm in a second marriage. My wife and I have been married for 19 years together. Between us, we have 8 children and 14 grandchildren, with another one on the way.
Wow.
So we are definitely a people of life, have a great joy with our family and a lot of fun.
And a lot of little feet running around.
There's a few of them.
So you've been with us for quite a number of years as Director of Life, Justice, and Human Dignity.
Going into our fifth year.
Yeah. And Director of Family Life, so you have two roles.
Two roles, and they're both very exciting, very full, and I can't imagine not doing them.
Well, they're quite connected as well, family life and pro-life, let's say, for short.
they are woven together in all aspects. You know, obviously, you don't have family life without being a person of respect life. But also, respecting life is something that you teach and educate through the family.
Our first community.
Absolutely. First community and first educators, that we should always be educating our children and even grandchildren.
And as Director of Religious Education, we do talk a lot about parents being the primary educators in the family. Now, you went to a pro-life leadership conference recently.
Yes. Every year, the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops puts on a conference for directors or leaders of the what they call pro-life secretariat. And we come together from across the nation. There's quite a few people that come. We come everywhere from Austin to Boston, from Baltimore to Baton Rouge. I think the one that wins the prize every year for distance is there's a deacon, Walter Yoshimitsu, who comes all the way from Honolulu. And he's been with us the last 3 years. And you know, it's great to see these people coming from other areas, and they're coming from all parts of the country. So some of us, obviously coming from Texas, we're a strong respect life state. We have people coming from California, Oregon, Washington, up in the extreme northeast, where they have more challenges with respect life issues legally and with their laws and with their state governments. And so it's always good for us to come together and talk about the things that we're encountering and how we're responding to them.
Now, pro-life issues can be very difficult issues. They have been in the forefront of many political stages, and, for example, abortion, but not just abortion, end-of-life issues, euthanasia, assisted suicide. From the womb to the tomb is what we say, and we're called to respect life in all those ages and stages. So let's go ahead and talk about the fabulous things that you learned at this conference and why they are pertinent to our listeners and to you and I.
Well, you know, there's many things that happen. When we go to these conferences, USCCB does not hold back bringing in really great speakers, educators, people out on the forefront of where we are, bishops, archbishops, cardinals, they all come in. And we have that time during that week, that 4 or 5 days that we're together, to intermingle and really exchange ideas and learn from one another. And this year, Archbishop Kurtz, who is from the Diocese of St. Louis, is the president of USCCB. And so he gave our opening keynote speech or talk. And what he really sat down to tell us or to remind us is that to be people of respect life, you have to first be people of courage, people of compassion, people of civility, and people of calm. And each one of those has a particular place within what we do as Christians, but also within the Respect Life movement. For example, to be a person of courage, you have to be willing to adopt the joy, the gift of joy, to be someone who publicly affirms life and the dignity of all life.
Now you said publicly. So people might privately affirm life, but we're called to publicly affirm life.
We are called to be Christians. We are called to be witnesses, not just to hold it to ourselves. We are called to go outside our comfort zone sometimes, and I don't mean in a negative way, but in a way to where we give witness publicly to that gift of joy that we have encountered in our Lord Jesus Christ and how we give that dignity to the other person. The second one that he spoke of was on compassion, and he addressed it as being the commitment of the heart to testify to the good of every person, no matter what their state, whether they're marginalized, they're on the fringes of society, they're the homeless, the poor, the child in the womb, even those, for example, one of the conference ended on, with a parent coming in who is nationally known, speaking to the life of his son. There's some books out that he's written on his son, Eli. And this family was given a negative or adverse prenatal diagnosis and were advised to abort this child. Like many other people in our society today, in our culture, in the Respect Life culture, they chose to have this child for whatever length of time that God would give this child to them. So they went through the pregnancy, were able to hold this child, to encounter this child, have it baptized for a short period of time, and give witness to the dignity of that life, even though it was only a very short-lived life. Because that child brought a certain joy of love to this family and gave a witness to their entire church community that life has great dignity and value, regardless of how long it's lived or how short it's lived.
And the mentality can be, if there's a deficiency or a defect, well, let's kill it or let's get rid of it. It's not up to our standards. There's even these model babies where if I want a blonde-haired, blue-eyed young child, we can do that in a laboratory and do artificial insemination to get whatever characteristics physically that I want in a child.
We're doing more and more of that, and I think it's very interesting because you're speaking from the societal side of it, mm-hmm. and looking at it, and I know you don't speak this way all the time necessarily, but that the very fact that in this conversation we're sitting here referring to this child as, for the way society says it, it rather than this boy, this girl, this human person that is within this womb. If this child has a deficiency in our mind or according to our medical diagnosis, we are going to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. So we push it away.
It becomes an object.
We objectify it so that we remove the dignity of the person. And that allows us to have that freedom, or we think we do, to say it doesn't matter. It has no value. It has no dignity. It's not truly a person. Therefore, we're only removing tissue or something that's defective rather than a human person who has a soul and has been created out of love for love.
I want to give some examples of just trying to witness in these areas. Three of my friends recently, young people, have spoken about after having a child, getting taken care of or getting snipped as if they were a dog or a cat, or getting neutered.
Or getting fixed. Like there's something wrong with what we were given by God.
And there's not, but there is this fear or this desire not to have any more children. And there's this idea of control and wanting to take matters into their own hands and take away the God-given gifts that God has given them, and just do away with that natural process in life.
Well, this is something that's been ongoing for some time. You know, we recognize what society has done with the language, and we look at fertility not as a gift but as a burden or as something we can use when we want to and turn it off when we don't want it. And so we think that we're fixing something as if it were broken, when in fact what we're doing is we're breaking it. And we don't always see it that way because society tries to give us another message. And yet if we come in with our faith and with our reason and recognize that even scientifically and medically, all things point to the fact that God created us with this fertility as a gift, and that it is that which God desires for us in life that we may not only procreate and, you know, continue the species, but that we can actually continue to love beyond ourselves, because that's what we're created for, is love. And love is not bound by the boundaries we place on our own desire. Love is always directed outward to the other person.
To God and to the other person.
And when we direct it inward to our own personal desire, what we want, I don't want to be pregnant. I don't want to lose my figure. I don't want to pay for another child as a father, perhaps. Or I don't want to have to work that much harder to get them to college. We make it about us. And we forget about the other.
Well, we actually just started all over again. I have a 9-year-old daughter, a 6-year-old daughter, and now a 6-month-old son. And we are not old pros at this. We are starting over. We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us on Labors of Love.
This is Labors of Love.
Natural family planning allows married couples to plan pregnancies while following the teachings of the church and respecting the gift of their married love. St. Elizabeth of Hungary Parish, 603 East 5th Street in Alice, will offer a natural family planning class Saturday, September 27th, beginning at 9:30 a.m. To find out more about natural family planning, how it works, why it works, and why more and more married couples are using this proven method to achieve or postpone pregnancy the natural way without medications, devices, or surgery, or to register for this class, visit dioceccc.org/NFP.
Thanks again for being with us on Labors of Love. I'm here with my guest, Deacon Stephen Nolte, Director of Family Life and Life, Justice, and Human Dignity. Deacon, we are talking about a conference that you went to, Pro-Life Leadership Conference, and we've been talking about pro-life issues. And you spoke about some themes, the four C's, courage, compassion, civility, and calm. And I think it's important in regards to compassion that when people are dealing with human life, that they really speak to where the person is at and have a really good bedside manner. And the reason I say that is because I've suffered many losses myself in terms of having children. And I remember this one particular loss where I asked the doctor, what's going to happen to my child? I had just heard that I was having a miscarriage, and the child was up on the screen, my little baby, the umbilical cord was still attached, and I saw the silhouette of the little baby, and I said, what's going to happen to my child? And the doctor said, well, we're going to examine it, burn it, and throw it away as medical waste. And again, there's that word it, and there's that word throw away. And we need to have compassion when we're talking to people, women, fathers, families that have gone through a miscarriage or stillborn or maybe even the loss of abortion and the pain that abortion brings. Can you speak to that example?
Well, yes. Actually, one of the parts of the conference, we did deal with certain resources that are becoming available in the instances of miscarriage and stillbirth. And speaking to that, you know, I think we have to first recognize that every human person is a masterpiece of God's creation. Whether it, you know, that child should not be born, should die, you know, should pass before being fully formed and fully born, that there would be a miscarriage or a stillbirth. And that we, as a people of faith, we have a sacred trust, a vocation, if you will, to act on behalf of all life. You know, if we look back at Genesis, we were given dominion over the animals and the plants, the sea and the fish. And we have a responsibility to that, but not just to that that's other, but also that is us, that is human. And if we allow, you know, as we have in our society, we've allowed society to kind of turn us into a throwaway culture, to use the word you used. And we've got to where we do not treasure so much the child in the womb. Dr. John Burkowski was one of our speakers at the conference, and he has a very interesting story I'll go into in a bit. But what one of the things that he brought up was that we have a right, but we have to know to speak up. In the case that you're in the hospital, you're going through this miscarriage, the doctor says, well, we're going to do this and this and this, this medical tissue, medical waste, whatever. You have a right to say, wait a minute, this is my child. I want the remains of my child because I'm going to go and bury this child. We are going to have a rite of celebration of this life, even though this life is not going to be with us for very long. But we have the right to do that. And within the guidelines, within the liturgies that are available, there are certain aspects that are available to help families go through that loss, who suffer the loss of a stillborn or a miscarriage, and to be able to make sense of that life and to assimilate it and integrate it into our daily living so that our families embrace it. They recognize so often, as you know, when we suffer the loss of someone in our family, our friends and family around us, within a few weeks, they go back to their lives. For them, life is pretty much normal.
But for the person that's had that loss?
For the one who suffered that loss, it is as real as the moment that it happened. And when you go into a miscarriage, it's the same thing. So often, the men do not even understand what our wives are going through when this happens because it wasn't as real to us in some way. Or we weren't given permission to enter into that life the same way that the mother who has carried this child in the womb has.
Well, let's talk about briefly the laws that men don't have, the rights that men don't have. If a woman wants an abortion, they're going to get it regardless of whether their husband doesn't want them to have the abortion.
The man does not have the right because our culture has changed the language so much so that it is not about the life of a child, the right to life, as so much as it is about we've created this whole thinking that we have a right that supersedes life. And yet so many things that we claim as rights are not truly rights. They're privilege at best.
I'd like to go back to when you talked about defects and the throwaway culture. I'd like to give a personal example. This is bringing back some memories, and I'm really enjoying my conversation with you. But there was a time where there was some prenatal testing done on my second live daughter. Her name is Isabella, and she's 6 years old. And the test came back negative. In other words, they told me that she was going to be sick. And so I remember calling my husband and saying, well, the good news is baby's still hanging around. And it looks like it's a girl and she might have spina bifida. And I was on the phone and then I thought to myself, maybe I shouldn't have said that over the phone. Well, people might have an abortion over that comment, over that those results that were actually wrong.
In many, many cases, our medical profession is out there doing these prenatal diagnoses and giving adverse prenatal diagnoses. And this is why so many of these families are starting to step up and say, no, we don't know until that child is born whether anything is wrong or not. You may do a genetic test and tell me they're going to have green eyes, and in fact, they have brown eyes. You may conduct a genetic test and tell me that this child is going to be a certain way. But until that child is actually born, scientifically, yes, we know certain things. But the reality of that life is always going to be different than what any amount of genetic tissue may tell us.
And like you said, the human person is the masterpiece of God. And honestly, if it weren't me that had some sense of understanding, someone else might have aborted the child and not waited the month that it would have taken to get some more, even more accurate results. And I just remember the doctor saying two words. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Well, what if I would have aborted my child, you know? So it wasn't even a question, but I do remember that very tough time. And it's just important that in all situations we value life. You're the pro-life director. You can speak more to this in all situations.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because I mentioned Dr. John Brukowski. And Dr. Brukowski works for the Tepeyac Family Center, which is a fertility center up in, I believe, New York. And he is actually a former abortionist who had a conversion experience, encountered that this was really a child in the womb, and decided that he had to make a complete change. He was non-practicing anything and made a complete change. He's now Catholic, living Catholic faith, fully engaged in it, and going out and teaching other medical professionals that you need to turn away, that just because what science taught you, don't forget the other side of who the human person is, that there is a soul, that there is something else called supernatural, spiritual life of the person. that you can't just look at the physical aspects, but you have to consider other things. And so he really embraces this and teaches a lot of this, so much so that, you know, he made a comment during the talk that he was giving, and it really stuck with me. And I think it's something maybe we all need to consider. And his comment was that he was speaking on the woman who hemorrhaged for 12 years and touched Jesus' garment. And he said, we in the medical profession and we Christians, not just those in the medical profession, but all Christians have a duty to become the hem of Jesus' garment so that others can reach out and be healed by that. Now, what that means, are we Jesus? No. Are we taking his place? No. But we can be that instrument that helps bring that healing to that person who's marginalized, that person who's out there on the fringes of society, be it homeless, disabled, elderly, you know, whatever the situation might be, those who have aborted, those who are in prison. We've got to be that healing touch of Christ within society. And that he really feels we've got to work with our medical doctors, even as you were sitting in this situation with this doctor and having the opportunity to say, doctor, there's something else you're not considering.
Well, let me tell you, he walked out as soon as that was done and left me there just staring at my child. And I still remember that to this day. Those were hard times, and I can imagine some of our listeners have had or know people that have had those hard times. But there are resources, right, Deacon Ulte?
There are many resources. And one of the things I think that is very important to throw out there that we need to think is the last point that Archbishop Kurtz made was calm. We have to have a sense of calmness, the serenity that in the face of any storm that comes in our life, however dark, deep, hard it might be, that calm only arises from prayer. So we have to develop that prayer life, engage God, and trust his goodness and his wisdom and mercy.
And listen to him.
And that was the other key, is that within that whole idea of civility, we have to learn to listen, to hear the voice of the other person, even as we have to look and see them.
Thank you so much, Deacon Nolte. I'm so glad that you attended this leadership conference and that you're able to share with us what you've learned. Stay with us. You're next with Sacred Moments.
Thank you. I look forward to being with you again.
This is Labors of Love, the ministries and evangelization of the Diocese of Corpus Christi. If you have questions or perhaps a comment about today's program, why not send us email? Address your email to labors@klux.org or by U.S. mail, 1200 Lantana, Corpus Christi, Texas, 78407. And now, with this week's Sacred Moment, here is Deacon Stephen Nolte.
If you've ever been around someone who is deaf, you know that they need to be looking at you face to face in order to hear you. The expressions of your face, the shape of your lips as you speak, and the motions of your hands signing words help them clue in to what is being said. In a very real sense, they cannot hear you if you are turned away from them. We are all familiar with the story of Samuel, who as a young boy was called by God in the middle of the night. He ran to Eli and said, "Here I am, you called me." Eli told him to go back to sleep, that he had not called him, so Samuel went back to sleep. It happened again and again, until the third time Eli understood that the Lord was calling the youth. So he said to Samuel, "Go to sleep, and if you are called, reply, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'" In his youthfulness and the darkness of night which surrounded him, Samuel was deaf. He could hear God calling, but he had no clue what was being said because he was not facing God. It was only after Eli explained what he should listen for that Samuel was able to hear and understand God's words. In Genesis, God tells us, "God formed man out of the clay of the ground and blew into his nostrils the breath of life." To breathe breath into someone's nostrils requires facing them in a very intimate way. Perhaps we don't experience God's word in the same way Samuel did, or maybe we think that we're not getting anything out of Mass. It could be that we're not hearing anything because we are turned away from him. Nonetheless, God is speaking. if we want to have life, if we long to know joy and peace, it is necessary to look for it at the source who is God. Many things in the world tempt us to turn away from these gifts of God, things like ambition, pride, envy, and self-pity. These are but a few of the more obvious things, but there are many others that are less so. To hear God who calls each of us by name, we must face Him. Then it is necessary to attune our hearing to Him. We have to learn how to listen, how to read the signs that are expressed in the events and persons He allows us to know. Sometimes we get so caught up in doing good things that we forget to take care of the very first things that have been entrusted to us. It might be that we place more importance on work than spending time with our family. The danger is always in turning away from God. The Lord said, "Go outside and stand on the mountain before the Lord. The Lord will be passing by." A heavy wind was rending the mountains and crushing rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake, there was fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. After the fire, there was a tiny whispering sound. May you always seek to hear God speaking in the circumstances of your life, and may He bless you with good friends to turn you in the direction of His voice as He calls you to the labors of His love. Amen.
Thank you for being with us on Labors of Love. I'd like to thank my special guest, Deacon Stephen Nolte, Director of Family Life and Life, Justice, and Human Dignity for the Diocese of Corpus Christi. If you would like more information, please call 361-882-6191 or visit us on the website diocesecc.org. Thanks again for being with us on Labors of Love.
This has been Labors of Love with Margaret Alleria. If you'd like to hear this or a previous program again, or download it to your device, browse to podcasts.goccn.net. Scroll down and select the Labors of Love category. Be with us next week at this same time for another edition of Labors of Love. Labors of Love is a production of the Department of Religious Education, Diocese of Corpus Christi, and CCN, the Catholic Communications Network.